The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1 with Kia Credit. Flexible 142 finance solutions from Kia, home of the 7-year warranty.
Text 51551. The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1.
Nightcrawler is a new crime thriller starring Jake Gyllenhaal, which tells the story of a young man who stumbles into the underground world of Los Angeles freelance crime journalism.
My motto is, if you want to win the lottery, you have to make the money to buy a ticket. Now, I know that today's work culture no longer caters to the job loyalty that could be promised to earlier generations. What I believe is that good things come to those who work their asses off, and that good people who reach the top of the mountain didn't just fall there.
Lou Bloom, a driven man desperate for work, finds that by being on the spot to film crashes, fires, murders and other mayhem, he can tap into the lucrative business of selling this sensational footage on to action-hungry TV executives.
We find our viewers are more interested in urban crime creeping into the suburbs. What that means is a victim or victims, preferably well-off and white, injured at the hands of the poor or a minority. The best and clearest way that I can phrase it to you, Lou, to capture the spirit of what we air, is think of our newscast as a screaming woman running down the street with her throat cut.
I understand.
That's fiction, but there are in fact teams of real news gatherers who scour the streets hot on the trail of breaking news, which they capture on film and feed to networks. RMG is one of these companies, and on their website they have a half-hour mix of their highlights reel. There's one point in the show reel where a cameraman is standing at the side of a motorway filming a car which has stopped. He's waiting in anticipation of another car hitting that car so he can capture it on tape. And sure enough, he continues to film, and as time passes, another car hits and another. In this instance, the cameraman is on the scene before the emergency services and moves onto the motorway while still holding his camera in hand and walks towards the smashed car.
Get out of the road! Hey, get out of the road now! Get out of the road! Are you okay? Are you okay?
People in these scenes are clearly distraught and badly injured as he positions the camera to continue filming as he goes to get help.
Don't move! Don't move!
There are also dramatic scenes as cameramen get frighteningly close to shootouts between police and gangs. All this dramatic footage is then sold on to TV networks.
Next at 8, breaking news, a violent clash at the immigration rally.
The deputy hit and killed in a crash.
You're watching KQ9 News at 8 in high definition.
Howard Raishbrook and his two brothers spent their early life in a small rural town in southern England before heading stateside and setting up RMG, which supplies breaking Los Angeles news to TV and cable networks across the globe. And they were hired as technical consultants and advisors on the production of Nightcrawler. I caught up with Howard as he got in from work and asked him what kind of a night he'd had.
We had a triple shooting, we had a big rig crash on the freeway, we had a couple of fires, and that's actually a slow night.
Is it indeed?
Yeah, triple gang-related shooting, big rig crash. Yeah, the weekends tend to be busier. So if you speak to us at a weekend, we'll have a lot more stuff.
I see. And we'll get to what you do for a living in a minute, Howard. But the movie itself, tell us something about it.
It's loosely based on what we do. We are freelance cameramen, and we listen to police radios, and we go and videotape crimes. We videotape shootings, fires, crashes, that kind of stuff. So Lou Bloom, the character in the movie played by Jake, he does exactly what we do, and he spends some time with us down there, riding out with us, seeing exactly how we do it, and joining in on the adrenaline rush of filming these breaking stories.
And is it close to reality then, the movie?
It is. There's a lot of creative aspects that Hollywood usually adds to movies. There's a lot of things in the movie that we wouldn't actually do. We wouldn't touch bodies. We wouldn't go into crime scenes, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. I don't fancy spending time in jail. But apart from that, he drives fast. He listens to police radios. He films the same stuff, and he sells the stuff to the networks exactly the same as we do.
And did Jake get an adrenaline rush when he was on the rounds with you in LA at night?
Oh, absolutely, yeah. We couldn't have been out any more than 15, 20 minutes before we'd had a car that had come off the freeway and landed on the floor about 50 feet below, ejecting three women. So we pull up at the same time as the fire department, and it was total chaos. And luckily, Jake's had this kind of experience before when he did the police movie End of Watch, so he was used to that kind of adrenaline.
It gave him a good grasp of what was going on.
Yeah, exactly. He was calm and collected. He was very focused and passionate about getting the role right. So he just observed what I was doing, and then some of the mannerisms in the movie are just like me, although a little darker.
Okay. And Howard, take us back. What brought you to Los Angeles in the first place?
We've always been interested in police and breaking news, even growing up in Gillingham, in North Dorset. I mean, there wasn't much going on, but if we heard sirens, we'd follow them on our bikes for 10 miles. And that's when we were in our early teens and decided that we wanted to work in television production. And the best place to mix a passion of production and breaking news is definitely Los Angeles. You know, it's the bank robbery capital, the pursuit capital of the world. So we put those two talents together and started our news agency.
And did you all come out together?
My twin brother Austin and I came out in 1995, and then my younger brother came about 10 years later. So, yeah, we were working the business together.
And tell us, when did you realize that there was money in this work?
You know, we had such a passion when we first came out. We were just filming. We probably filmed for 10 years just for the pure adrenaline and, you know, inquisitive nature that we had. We would just go home at Christmas and show our families the stuff we'd got on video. And then we started watching the local news, realizing that the kind of stuff we were filming was on television. And there's so many news networks here. It's just there's Hispanic stations and English stations. And we decided that, you know, we'll make those relationships and start selling stuff. And now we make a pretty good living from it.
Yeah. And can you remember the first bit of news tape that you sold on?
Yeah. It was actually a really, really graphic kind of a wake-up call. It was a Ferrari crash. A guy was allegedly doing over 100 miles an hour. He came off the side of the freeway and landed in a house. And the car caught fire. He died. And we were friends with the coroner, and they didn't have a photographer on scene, so they got us to take pictures of the body. So, as you can imagine, we'd seen a lot of stuff, but to get that close was kind of a little bit of a shock. Especially growing up in North Dorset, you don't see that much stuff.
Well, that's what I'm just wondering. It was a bit of a culture shock going from where you were from to downtown L.A.
Oh, absolutely, yeah, because we'd be lucky if we saw the fire department go out once a month in Gillingham, and then we'd come here and it's constant sirens and, you know, gang shootings, that kind of stuff. And to be honest, to begin with, we were a little naive. We would go into these gang-ridden areas just, you know, I think we were a novelty. We would be pointed at and looked at and laughed at, and we didn't really know the severity of the areas we were in.
Mm-hmm. And when it came to being paid, did you understand from an early stage that this sort of material was much sought after, and that you could pay, the TV networks would pay a premium?
No, because we didn't really know the market. We knew production and we knew about that. We just didn't know how much the TV stations paid. I mean, you have 13 TV news outlets to sell your stuff to. So if you sell five stories to two of those stations every night, you can make an absolute fortune.
And you did.
And we did. And then our archive stuff, because we'd shot for so long without doing anything with it, we have a huge archive now, which we're packaging for content for the world's most amazing videos and Caught on Camera and those type of shows. So we're in the middle of a 52-episode production of that using exclusively our content.
And tell me, what's the most dramatic night that you've ever experienced, Howard?
A couple of things come to mind. There was the rescue of the woman on the freeway you talked about, where I was. I actually heard that original crash happen, went up on top of the freeway and got the other cars crashing into it, and then put my camera down and tried to rescue the woman. I was concerned the car was going to catch fire. We've seen a lot of stuff. We've seen plane crashes, train crashes. I was filming a gang shootout. Actually, it was an undercover operation with the LAPD, and a kid came out of the rave club with an AK-47 machine gun and opened fire in our direction. I get all that on tape. So we did a lot of interviews for that because that was caught on camera. But you wouldn't believe the amount of stuff we've seen. And obviously we tell our parents that we tell them the edited version of what we see.
Yeah, because it must have some effect on you, though.
It does. I think it did to begin with a lot more than it does now. And it's not that we don't care anymore. It's just I think we've seen so much stuff that, I mean, the ones that involve kids, obviously, those definitely affect us, but it makes you appreciate life. You know, you see all these people. When you see us on the street, you're kind of having a bad day. So it makes us go home at night and really appreciate life.
But you're also putting yourself into very dangerous situations. Do you not fear for your life in some of these situations?
You know what? I scare myself thinking about how we used to put ourselves in those situations when we had kind of a real disregard, or not really a disregard, but a naivety of the situation. But now, you know, we're married and my brother has a kid, and we have a lot more responsibility. But luckily, we have very understanding wives. But we take precautions. We're a little bit crazy, but we're not stupid. So we wear body armor. And we have protection in the car, and we just don't go into situations. You have to be very aware of your surroundings down there.
It must be hard at times, though, to avoid the line of fire.
It is, and I think we've all come to terms with the fact that if we go while we're down there doing what we love, we go. You know, we've come to terms with that, and as long as the camera's rolling, we're good to go.
Give us the normal routine for you then of an evening in LA.
Yeah, so my days are kind of reversed. I sleep during the day and I go to work at night. And all the TV crews, they finish their newscasts at 11:30 at night until 4 o'clock in the morning. So you have that 4.5-5 hour window where I will go out and my crew will go out and listen to the police radios in different parts of town. We film everything from crashes, shootings, burnings, burning buildings, brush fires, that kind of stuff. And then we have to make deadlines. We will bring in the footage into our computers, we edit the stuff, and then we send it to the stations. And then the following morning, we check and see what they've used. We go to bed anywhere from 6 o'clock in the morning to 10 o'clock in the morning. Obviously, it depends on how busy it is. Weekends seem to be a little busier.
So it's fairly instant. Once you get the footage, it might be on a network within minutes?
Yeah, I say 10 minutes, we can have stuff around the world. We have our own system set up where we all upload our content digitally to our video server, and then it automatically gets distributed to the control rooms of all these stations. So it's not just locals. Obviously, it depends on the size of the story. You know, we can have stuff on the BBC, or we can have stuff on Channel 4 in the UK. We can have stuff on Sky. You know, it depends on the severity of the story. But within 10 minutes, we can have stuff around the world.
Yeah, I'm just wondering about that. Is there any limit to what the networks are prepared to show?
There's a big difference between US networks and Hispanic networks, obviously because we're very close to Mexico here. We have to basically do two edits. We do a graphic edit for the Hispanic stations because they love that, they show it. The American, you know, the English-speaking stations are a little more careful of what they show. They will show bodies, but they'll be covered bodies. So we have to do two edits, one for the Hispanics, because they'll show everything, they don't care.
It's fascinating. And I'm just wondering, when you're at the scene of an incident, how do the police and the fire services view your presence?
It depends. We have a good relationship with the police and fire departments, and it depends on the severity of the situation and whether there is an imminent danger. A lot of times we'll have rookie police not know the rules, because we're fully credentialed with press. So we're allowed to go where public not, and it takes a rookie to really get in our way to kind of mess things up, because if you miss a shot, like recently I went to film a fire and a rookie police officer came up to me with the LAPD, told me to leave. I told him I could be there, and he told me I couldn't. I asked to speak to his boss and he arrested me. I spent the night in jail.
I see. So you're fully accredited. As far as you're concerned, you're allowed to be there and no police intervention will get in your way.
Yeah, absolutely. As long as we're not interfering, we are fully credentialed and we give up all, I think, liability rights. You know, we're there at our own risk, basically. So if we get injured, it's on us.
And tell us about that arrest. Was it your first? Did you spend a night in prison?
Yes. Yeah, I did. It wasn't a pleasant thing. It was an unfortunate incident, and I still stand by my rights as a journalist to film these incidents, and the LAPD were just not understanding at all. I wanted to speak to their watch commander. He refused. He wouldn't even give me the name. Put me in handcuffs, processed me about 5 hours later, got transferred to the facility in downtown where I couldn't make a phone call. It was a horrific experience. I went in there, and I've never been arrested before. and I'm sitting on my bed with gang members around me talking about stuff. I was kind of a novelty in there because I'm as white as you get. You know, I'm a pale-skinned Englishman sitting there with hardcore tattooed gang members. So it was an experience, and now I have to, you know, have to fight that in court, unfortunately, all because of a rookie police officer.
But he might take the view that you are in the way and that you're hindering an investigation into something happening.
Yeah, and we have a lot of respect for the police and the fire department, and often we'll give them footage of our stuff for training purposes, and it's just, you know, maybe I had a bad day, maybe he had a bad day, but we butted heads, and I stood my ground, and I know my rights, and essentially he arrested me on 148.2, which is interfering at a fire scene, so... Now I have to do a bit of community service and get that to go away.
That's what's lies ahead. I'm just wondering, isn't there a moral question here, Howard? Sometimes you're going to get to the scene of a crime or a crash first. Don't you have a moral obligation to come to the aid of any injured persons, we say, ahead of taking shots?
Absolutely, absolutely. And if I can do both, I will. But my first concern is helping someone if we can. There is a lot of instances where we'll show up. Obviously, some things we can't help. If someone's obviously deceased, we can't help. If someone's in danger, we will absolutely help. And that was one thing I took upon myself when we first started doing it, because we felt helpless when seeing these people, dying right in front of us. I actually did a first responder course and learned a lot of first aid and CPR. That's actually how I met my wife. We met on a crash scene. I was there first. She came from the other direction, and she was a paramedic in the Air Force. So she treated one patient, I was treating the other, and married 6 months later.
Well, that's amazing. Well, given that you spend so much time at the front line with the emergency services, it was likely that you would marry someone from the profession.
Absolutely, and I'm really lucky. She fully supports me, and she really does. And we'll be on a date night, and I try not to listen to police radios or check my phone for tweets of fires. And I'm trying to get better at that. But she puts up with a lot if I jump out of bed at 10 o'clock in the morning, waking her and the dogs up, and going to film a fire. So I'm lucky to have such a supportive wife.
I'm sure you are. By the way, in the hierarchy of local TV news networks, what types of clips command the best pay?
Anything visual. We get to the scene sometimes, and there's some real good visual activity going on, like a huge fire. Flames sell really well. Police chases sell really well. Sometimes we'll get to stuff a little bit late, and all you can shoot is crime scene tape and a body on the floor. That kind of stuff, we call it B-roll. It's like very static stuff. It's not very, it doesn't please you visually. So anything that's visual, even a fire hydrant that's been knocked over and there's a 100-foot water geyser, that's visual. So anything visual like that will definitely sell.
Mm-hmm. And I'm just wondering about shootings.
Yeah, shootings... The stations used to buy that, but because it's so commonplace here now, it has to be a triple shooting like last night, or it has to be maybe a child involved or a car-to-car shooting or something like that. But because it happens so often, those don't sell.
Yeah. Did I read somewhere, Howard, that you said about one particular type of incident, that gold is getting something like a crash on tape?
Absolutely, yeah. Something like that is quite rare. I mean, it's becoming more common now with the digital age and people that have dash cams, and there seems to be a lot of stuff out there. But 10 years ago, we were the only guys to literally go and film these minor crashes on the freeway and get cars piling into one another. So that, you're looking at $10,000, $15,000 over the lifetime of that clip. Because we sell to the news, and then we sell to the entertainment shows too, like World's Most Amazing Videos. But that's the kind of gold stuff. Anything on tape, shooting on tape, crash on tape, that's some good money.
And your twin brother, Austin, he's your partner in detecting crimes and accidents. Is there a lot of rivalry between you?
Absolutely. I mean, being a twin, we've always had our rivalry from schoolwork and girlfriends and everything else. So we always try and get the best shot. And my brother was quite annoyed when I got a shootout on tape. First thing he did, he just wished he was down there. So we try and get the best shots, and we try and outdo each other.
Yeah, so, some would call your occupation a bit macabre, that you're feeding off the misfortune, the misery of others.
Yes. And we constantly battle that. And I put it like this. I filmed a child that had fallen from a three-story window a couple of years ago. And I'm very sensitive around those kind of stories because tensions are high and there's parents and it involves a kid. And I was there filming it. I was filming from a distance. And the parents came up to me and some other parents and said, "You're a disgusting human being. How dare you do this?" And a bunch of profanity. And I went up to them afterwards and I said, "Look, you know, I appreciate what you're saying, but look at it from my point of view. I put this on television tonight, and maybe it teaches people how to secure their windows to stop other kids falling out. So it's almost like a public service announcement that we do. You know, we're educating people." And then they came back up to me and said, "Look, you know, you're absolutely right. You know, it's not as though, you know, tensions are high, but we understand your side of the story." And yeah, that night they did. They had specialists on television saying how to, you know, childproof your windows at home so nothing like this would happen again.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds intriguing. What's the closest to death you've come?
Believe it or not, it's when I film crashes on the freeway. It's just how dangerous it is on the freeway. You're there filming. Obviously, you try and stay out of the way, but 3 o'clock in the morning, there's a lot of DUI drivers, and it scares me more being on a freeway than being in a gang shootout. Funny enough, I mean, the closest I've come was when a kid opened fire on my brother and I with an AK-47 automatic assault rifle. You can hear the bullets flying past our heads, and the detective said that we were 6 inches from death.
Yeah, I don't know. A lot of people listening now will be taken aback at the lengths you're going to do your day job or night job.
Yeah, and I honestly can't explain why we do it. It's actually something that's been built into us. It's not something we learn to do and enjoy. It's something that has been part of us since we were very young. It's something I will always do. And if I get to my 80s, I can imagine cruising around in my old Buick American car and doing the same thing.
Yeah, and I suppose a lot of it comes down to just making split-second decisions.
That's absolutely right. Absolutely right. It can be very costly. Not only if you miss the footage, but it can cost you with your life. Yeah, you have to make some very, very quick decisions and some safe decisions too. Yeah.
And do you contemplate hanging up your boots and retiring at any stage?
You know, I enjoy it so much. I don't think so. I do a lot of production work as well, and this is almost classed as a hobby that we've earned a lot of money from. So I'm going to keep going as long as I can stand up. I'll be doing it.
Has it made you very wealthy?
I have a nice house and I have a great life, so I appreciate it.
And what's the biggest amount of money you've got for one single piece?
For one night's camera, maybe $20,000, $25,000, something like that. Over the piece of the car crash I caught on tape, the one you described, those kind of things sell really, really well. But we're right in the middle of production on a 52-episode exclusive deal where we're talking hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Last question for you, Howard. Will Nightcrawler be good or bad for your business?
I get asked that question a lot. I think it's going to be both. I think it's going to have a negative impact on how people perceive us. It is a lot darker than we actually are. We don't do things like he does in the movie. I drag bodies around, and we absolutely don't do that. But then it's been good for our company. You know, it's given us a lot of exposure and that kind of stuff. So, you know, it's going to be both.
Have you seen the movie?
I have. I have seen the movie, and it is a really good movie, and I enjoyed working on it. I enjoyed working on the script and with Jake and Bill Paxton, and yeah, we had a great time.
Great stuff. Well, listen, Howard, thank you very much for joining us this morning, and the film of which you speak, Nightcrawler, goes on general release here in Ireland tomorrow. Howard Racebrook, thanks a lot.
I appreciate it. Thanks very much.
Take care.
Text 51551. The John Murray Show on RTE Radio 1.